Ladies and gentlemen, good day, and welcome to APAR Industries Limited earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note, this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ambesh Tiwari from Essential Technologies. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. This is Ambesh Tiwari from Essential Technologies. I welcome you all for the Q4 FY25 earnings call for APAR Industries. To discuss the business performance and outlook, we have from the management side, Mr. Kushal Desai, Chairman and Managing Director, Mr. Chaitanya Desai, Managing Director, and the CFO, Mr. Ramesh Iyer. I would now pass on to Mr. Kushal Desai for the opening remarks. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah. Thank you, Ambesh. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the APAR Industries Q4 and the full year's earnings call. Let me start by actually giving a quick overview of the overall performance of the company. I will follow that up with a short update on the industry and the spending and trends. And then I would like to get into more details on the segmental performance of the three major businesses. Post all that, we can open up the floor to questions. So APAR concluded the financial year with both revenue and volume growth across all the three business verticals. It's an all-time high quarter for us, and the first time in our history our quarterly revenues crossed 5,000 crores. So for Q4 FY25, the consolidated revenue came in at 5,210 crores, which is up 16.9% year on year. The domestic business continued to demonstrate a strong growth, and the domestic side is up 31.4% versus the same period previous year. Our export mix is at 31.3% for the quarter. The US business has improved in this quarter. It is 195.6% higher than what it was over the last year Q4, and is 48.1% more than Q3 FY25. So there has been a increase in the execution of orders and the receipt of orders from the US thus far. In terms of EBITDA, our EBITDA is at 5.7% and it's 483 crores. Our EBITDA is up by 5.7% to 483 crores. It is at 9.3% EBITDA margin. The profit after tax came in at 250 crores, which is about 5.9% higher than the previous year. The profit after tax margin is at 4.8%. If you look at the 12-month consolidated revenues, we stand at 18,581 crores, which is 15% higher than a year ago. Exports has contributed to 32.8% of revenues in FY25 as opposed to 45.2% in FY24. Coming to a few key industry highlights, according to the National Electricity Plan, India's peak power demand is expected to hit 388 gigawatts by 2031-32, for which the country would require a power generation capacity of 997 gigawatts. This will necessitate expanding the transmission and distribution network from source to grid and then through the last mile to the consumer. The Union government is planning to connect all upcoming green energy units to a green national grid at an estimated investment of 4.9 lakh crore rupees between 2027 and 2032. So the NEP has also projected that during the same period, 2027 to 2032, India's battery energy storage capacity will reach 47 gigawatts. And the current capacity is just about 300 megawatts. On the renewable energy front, the Ministry of New and Renewable Energy achieved a historic milestone in the renewable energy sector for the financial year FY25 as the country has recorded its highest ever renewable energy capacity addition in a single year, adding 25 gigawatts, which is nearly a 35% increase over the previous year's addition of 18.6 gigawatts. India's solar power sector led this growth, with the capacity addition rising from 15 gigawatt in FY24 to nearly 21 gigawatt in FY25, marking an increase of nearly 38%. The country also achieved a significant milestone of surpassing 100 gigawatts of installed solar capacity this year. Additionally, India's solar module manufacturing capacity has nearly doubled from 38 gigawatts to about 74 gigawatts in March 25, while the solar PV cell manufacturing capacity has tripled from 9 gigawatt to 25 gigawatt. So all these are indicators that show that, you know, solar addition should continue to take place at an accelerating pace. Coming to the transmission line and substation addition, in FY25, India's transformation capacity has grown by 7% year on year, the installed capacity by approximately 5%, and the transmission line network by approximately 2%. There were many issues with respect to right-of-way constraints and land acquisition hurdles which impacted growth. Also, with the national elections taking place in this financial year, the first few months were pretty much lost in terms of all the election-related activities, with relatively less expansion taking place through that period. To address the rising demand and to facilitate integration of the renewable energy sources, the transformation capacity and installed capacity will need to grow by exactly 2 times, and the transmission line network by approximately 1.3 times by 2023. This demand will be largely met through the tariff-based competitive bidding, which is the TBCB. 45 interstate transmission systems, or what they call ISTS projects, will be awarded under the TBCB through this period of FY25 onwards. The Central Transmission Utility of India Limited has released a rolling plan which is running up to 2930, projecting a capex of almost 4.3 lakh crore rupees for upgrading the ISTS network. So coming back to the financial performance by each of the individual segments, we can look at the conductor segment first. In the fourth quarter of FY25, revenues grew by 24.5% year on year, driven by strong demand in the domestic market. We also had higher amount of realization and exports from the US. Volumes grew by about 5.9%. Exports contributed towards 24.5% to the overall revenue. The US revenue grew by 142.6% for the conductor division over Q4 FY24 and 229% over Q3 of FY25. If you look at the premium product mix, that has contributed to 45.9% in Q4 FY25. In terms of EBITDA post open period forex, that came in at 41,430 rupees per metric ton, as against 48,438 rupees per metric ton in the same period last year. The product mix and growth in shipments to the US has led to the higher EBITDA per metric ton over what we saw in Q3 FY25, which had come in at a period low of 18,860 per metric ton. So the order book stands today at 7,163 crores. New orders received during the quarter came in at 2,114 crores. On an annual basis, revenues have grown by 19.3%. Volume has grown by 7.8% versus last year. The export mix was 24.2%. So even though the volume growth is showing 7.8%, a lot of value-added products have been, the mix has moved towards that, which includes the substitution of the conventional ACSR conductors with AL59, and also the overall copper business has grown with the copper transpose conductors going into the transformers being a major leading factor in the growth. Coming to the oil business, revenues from the operations grew 3.3%, but the volume has grown by 9.3% versus the Q4 FY24. Transformer oil volume growth came in at 7% higher. Automotive oil grew 6% higher, while the industrial lubricant side grew by 11.3% year on year. Export remains a healthy 41.7% of the mix. The EBITDA per KL came in at 5,873 rupees per KL versus 4,251 rupees from a year ago. If you look at the full year period, FY25, revenue has grown by 5.2% to reach 5,087 crores. The volume growth has been at 7.8%. Transformer oil volumes have grown by 14%, driven by stronger demand both domestically as well as overseas. And our automotive sales growth, led by higher volumes to OEMs, has grown by 17.6%. Export for the year contributed 44% of the overall revenue. EBITDA per KL for the year came in at 6,145 rupees per KL as opposed to 5,746 rupees per KL in the previous year. Now, coming to the metrics of our cable business, our cable business revenue for Q4 FY25, it posted a strong revenue growth of 29.9%, 30%, to reach 1,410 crores on the back of both strong domestic demand as well as increased shipments to the US. Continued infrastructure capex has led to the domestic business growth. This includes shipments to various data centers that are being set up in the country and is covering not only Amazon, but also Google, Microsoft, and Adani. Export mix came in at 28.4% in Q4 FY25 versus 24.7% in Q4 FY24. The US revenues grew by 268% over Q4 of FY24. Coming to the EBITDA post-forex, that recorded a year-on-year growth of 21.5% to reach 150 crores. The EBITDA margin is slightly down by 0.7% versus what we had in Q4 FY24, but it is up 1% versus what we had in Q3 FY25. So this has contributed from a better product mix and larger shipments to the US. Scale economics has also added to improve the EBITDA margin over Q3 of FY25. The pending order in the cable business is at about 1,500 crores. So if you look at the revenues for the 12-month FY25 for the full year, that has grown by 28.1%. Domestic business grew by 43%. The export mix stands at 31%. And the EBITDA post forex grew 13.4% to reach 498 crores for the year. So the US business has shown a recovery in this quarter, which along with continued domestic business growth has resulted in an all-time high revenue for the company as well as for the conductor division, oil division and the cable division individually. This was in spite of the general election and, you know, some of the supply chain disruptions that happened and a poor US demand which happened in the first part of the year. We have also seen increased Chinese competition, which has posed challenge in terms of export to countries where the Chinese products are well accepted, which includes some parts of Africa, Latin America, and Europe. We believe that the fundamentals of the business remain intact, and we are optimistic that we will continue to be able to deliver a sustainable and healthy business in the coming periods. The US tariff situation continues to have a bit of an overhang until there is a BTA in place with the US. hopefully this is at an advanced stage, and we hope that the outcome will be favorable for India relative to what tariff is being charged to other countries. I would just like to reiterate the fact that over 40% of the wires and cables and conductors are imported into the United States, which is over $20 billion from a total market, which is about $55 billion. And with this whole energy transition moving towards more electricity-based demand, and with the growth of hyperscaler data centers, where the largest number of data centers being added are in the United States, we would continue to see the US as being an important and a strategic market. The gap remains so high that the only way that the electrification can continue is with import of product. Within hopefully a short time, the overhang should actually settle down in terms of where exactly this stands. The company is actually stepping up substantially its CapEx plans. We completed CapEx of about 500 crores in FY25. We have a plan of adding 1,300 crores of CapEx through FY26 and running into the first quarter of FY27. So the CapEx should go in the next 12 to 15 months. And considering commissioning, in about 18 months, we should have most of this equipment up and running. This includes about 800 crores on the cable side with building of a brand new site. Post this expansion, we would expect a turnover to be able to be generated from that complex, which would take the business up to about 10,000 crores of capacity that we would have from what we've executed this year, which is close to 5,000 crores. So it's essentially being able to double the capacity of the business. We are looking at adding about 300 crores of CapEx to the conductor business, and that includes some of the rods which need to be produced for our cable business as well. We are also expecting to spend about 200 crores in the oil business, where we are building a brand new storage terminal in the JNPT port, so that we can cut down the supply chain costs of, you know, bringing product into the country, better distribute it across, you know, the manufacturing facilities we have. And this is also going to allow us to be able to do bulk exports from the terminal of transformer oil, white oils and pharmaceutical oils, which is something that APAR has not had so far. We've had to resort to doing export only through flexi bags and containers. So in conclusion, I would say that, you know, looking at the situation today that I've explained, we are fairly bullish in terms of, you know, how the business will develop over the next few years. We are loading upfront the capex that we plan, so that we have the capacities in place, you know, as the demand in the business continues to grow. We also have a very detailed corporate presentation in the investor section of our website. I would encourage you to please go through that to get a more detailed perspective on the company's, its activities and strategy. So with that, I come to the end of my opening remarks, and we'd be very happy to open up the floor to questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Mohit Kumar from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good evening, sir. Absolutely fantastic job on the profitability. My first question is that from the looks of it, it looks like you are selling a lot of non-premium conductors in the domestic market. Still, you have been able to maintain the EBITDA per ton. What explains the strong profit despite lower exports? Is it AL-59?
Yes. So, as you see, in this particular quarter four, we have about 45% of the products coming from the premium products that we have. And this is actually excluding AL59. AL59, we are still categorizing it as a standard non-premium product. So 45% of the products are premium, giving a higher margin. Plus you have AL59 as a non-premium product, but still the margins are higher as compared to the conventional business. Secondly, if you see this particular quarter, we have a rebound in terms of the US business. The turnover from the US business has increased, where the margins are higher, and that has also resulted in high margin, especially in this particular quarter. So broadly, these two are the reasons that has helped. And the, also, if you see that the copper business is also scaling up, the margin and the products and the mix of copper is going up, that is also helping us to increase the margins of the overall conductor division.
My second question is on the U.S. The U.S. looks to be a lot more uncertain compared to the last quarter, right? Does it, is it impacting our order, is it impacting our sales in Q1? Is it a fair assumption that Q1 will be weak till the time we'll get the clarity as you go forward, and the US sales will peak, peak once we have the FTA in place?
So, Mohit, Q1 actually we are still continuing on the cable side. We are still we've got a green signal for a lot of the material which had been planned to be produced in the month of April, May, and June. As you know, the tariff you know pause has happened up to the 9th of July. So, a lot of the order book which was there, we've got a tick you know to continue to execute that. Some of the customers who are already at advanced stages of executing their projects have even agreed to pay whatever is the differential tariff that comes in post the 9th of July as well, because the cables are required to complete you know their projects. So you won't see that dip actually taking place substantially in Q1. Also keep in mind that a lot of product is already in the DDP stage, you know, meaning so DDP as in it's in transit, so all that revenue will be booked in the first quarter of FY26. Similarly, even on the conductor side, there is a product which is in and being delivered. Plus, we've got clearances to dispatch product for produce and dispatch product for this quarter. I think beyond this quarter, many customers are just waiting to see what is going to happen, both from the US side as well as from the Indian side. There have been various announcements and you know of trade delegations going back and forth, you know, very high level. Right from Vice President of the United States, Commerce Minister of India, etc. And the sense is that, you know, whatever be the final situation that settles, India should hopefully not be at a country. You know, if you see the major places from where cables were being imported into the US, looking at the US import statistics, countries were basically Vietnam, Cambodia, Indonesia, India, Mexico. From where, you know, the kind of product range that we are exporting, the competition is coming from. Both Cambodia and Vietnam are seen as a proxy for China. And their duty rates are much higher than whatever were the tariffs that were originally declared. India being at 26%, these two countries were at 44 and 46% respectively. And Mexico at 25%. So that was what was announced. Then the pause came in, so everybody is at 10 currently. And, you know, the we'll have to wait and watch. That's why I said in my opening remarks that there is a bit of an overhang. But I think the market requires a very, very substantial amount of import. It's exceeding $20 billion. And, you know, the kind of demand that's coming from data centers and these things, you know, one is continuing to scale up. One of the highlights which I did not mention in the opening remarks is that we've got, after supplying Microsoft quite satisfactorily in India, we have gone onto the global vendor list for supply to data centers in the United States. And, you know, so that I think is another area where we're looking forward to be now able to participate in various RFQs that come up through our FY26 onwards. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you and all the best, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mohit Motwani from Tara Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, am I audible?
Yes, Mohit. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for the opportunity. First question is on the conductor exports. Now, you know, we saw very sharp growth in the U.S. exports on a quarter-on-quarter basis. Can you talk about the outside U.S. markets, what we have seen there? Because I think in the last quarter, U.S. was soft and other geographies were helping to give the growth. But I think in this quarter, seems there's some moderation in the outside U.S. market. So if you can speak about that.
Yeah, I think last quarter we had actually explained in one of the questions that outside the U.S. and India, the rest of the markets were weak for us because the Chinese competition was very aggressive. So this is the situation for the quarter which has just got over as well, and even for the you know, future also, the immediate future, we see the situation continuing. It's a domestic market which is doing well in India.
On the U.S. side, also in the last 6 months, what we've been doing is that we have been actually working and improving our on-the-ground presence in the U.S. So APAR today has four employees, one very senior advisor and three employees on the ground in the U.S. On the cable side. There's one person who is being seconded there on the conductor side full-time. And we've been signing up distribution and reps, manufacturing reps, which is what they have called in the U.S., which is today covering now, the people we signed up is covering about 75% of the U.S. markets. So we've been systematically working with them to increase our approvals in the public utilities, in the independent-owned utilities, as well as, you know, in the commercial industrial space, including real estate. So on the ground, you know, the thing is, you know, the U.S. market, may we've made quite a lot of advances in terms of on-the-ground presence, on-the-ground approvals. I also mentioned about the Microsoft approval just a couple minutes ago. So as Chaitanya has mentioned, you know, other markets may you're finding a lot of Chinese competition. There is a subsidy which is in the region of about 8 to 12% coming in from China. Selected premium products, we've signed up some business, you know, in Latin America for HTLS and, you know, few other premium products. But otherwise, the domestic market continues to remain very strong, and the prospects in the U.S. are looking better. If this tariff overhang wasn't there, I think we would have been looking at a very, very substantial runway and growth there. But we are optimistic that this thing will also get resolved. Keep in mind that basic import duty for aluminum is at 25%, even today, in the U.S. So as a consequence, you know, even the local manufacturers are facing, you know, an increase taking place. And that is not based on any reciprocal tariff, etc. There is a separate notification out, you know, which is under the section 232, under which this higher tariff has been applied for aluminum, steel and a few other products. So even though we see that, you know, non-US exports are not looking very attractive because of the pricing, the Indian market itself is very strong. And the US market, you know, it will settle down, and we are quite optimistic that the business there is going to grow. So we are basically gearing ourselves up, you know, to be able to make sure that we meet all that demand coming up.
Sure. Thank you for the detailed color. One question on your employee expenses. Any reason for the sharp drop quarter on quarter? Is there any reason for that?
No, there's no specific reason for this. Some of the estimates based on quarterly numbers, we revise the employee benefit expenses. There is no specific reason for the drop in the numbers.
Okay. Sure. And one more question on your cables. You mentioned the capex of front-end capex of 800 crores. So in the previous course, we have guided for 25% revenue growth for cables. So this incremental capex, does it increase our guidance for cables, or is this already factored in the higher capex, the 25% growth factored in the higher capex?
So we are still guiding a 25% growth for the simple reason that, you know, if you see by the time this whole thing is executed and in place, it is really going to be available for revenues that kick in from FY27 onwards. Most of the money is going into the greenfield site, where almost 48 acres of property is being completely built up. All the civil infrastructure will be in place. And so it's, you know, we are making an investment essentially a year ahead, you know, so that we have a clear runway to get to 10,000 crores on the business, in the business.
Got it. Thanks for the answers. I'll drop back in the queue. Thank you.
Thank you so much. The next question is from the line of Amit Anwani from PL Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for taking my question. And first of all, congratulations for the strong numbers. First question in continuation to cables again, sir. You said we'll be investing 800 crores and revenue is going to double in next 3-4 years. Wanted to understand this incremental 5,000 crore revenue, as we have been also discussing in the past, the specialty cables like elastomeric, E-beam, and low duty cables also. So where the focus will be in this capacity expansion, and will it be margin accretive? Any guidance of directional margins which we are targeting to achieve?
So in terms of where the capacity expansion is happening, there is, you know, the all varieties of cables are expanding. So we are looking, if you take the XLP side, which is the power cable side, our medium voltage capability, which is your 11 kV, 33 kV, and then in this expansion, we will also have the ability to manufacture 132 and up to 220 kV. So all the testing equipment, manufacturing equipment, everything is going in. So our total capacity to produce medium voltage cables and up to 220 kV cables, if we aggregate that, it will go up by 4x from what it is as of today. So there's two new lines coming in, two existing lines getting transferred to the new plant and getting completely rebuilt. So that, you know, there will be not only this capacity expansion, but our utility cost and conversion cost will also substantially fall. Then if you come to the low tension cable side, because we do a whole lot of specialty LT cables, UL approved, you know, for the US market, which go into the residential, commercial, industrial, utility, etc. So that portion of the business also the capacity will double from what it is, you know, today. We are also looking at doubling the capacity that we have for the medium voltage cables that go into windmills. So we are seeing a big resurgence on the windmill side. And our sense is that there will be modernization schemes that will come up. If you look at the windmill landscape, if you see once upon a time, the wind power was much more than solar power. If you dial back about 10 years. And those windmills which have gone in are all very low capacity. You know, the windmills are 250 kilowatts, etc. Today the minimum standard is 3.3, 3.5 megawatt. So a lot of new windmills are being added to form the hybrid combination of wind and solar. In addition to that, we expect that over the next few years, a very good policy will come in, which will upgrade, you know, the old windmills to be modernized for new windmills, because that real estate is already occupied by windmills which are actually of very low capacity. You know, the best tracts of land where the wind is at very high velocity. So the wind side is also going to increase. We are substantially increasing. We've already increased our electron beam capability. There's one more machine coming in. So the amount of solar cables which we can produce, we've doubled the solar cable production between FY24 and FY25. And we will have the capability to double that from FY25 as we go into FY27. So all around you will see, you know, the... All categories may we will have, you know, ability to expand. We are also bringing in some new equipment on the cable side to be able to make much higher volume of cables that go into the Indian defense, where, you know, you need very specialized type of equipment to make those cables. We expect that over the next few years, defense spending is not only increasing, but the indigenization content is also increasing. That includes, you know, the cables which we are going to supply. All around we see on the cable side the growth, and we don't want to miss out on these opportunities. So we are expanding our capacity at least 1 year ahead of time, because it's very difficult in a growth phase like this to time exactly when the growth will happen. So all varieties of cables ke liye, we have got expansion in place. The only area where we are not expanding is in optical fiber, the optical fiber side, because there we see that the OFC cable demand is actually quite poor at this stage. So our concentration is on everything other than OFC.
Right. Right. So my second question, sir, again, on the U.S. business, though there's a very good comeback and resurgence in U.S. business, which has happened for us this quarter. And you highlighted that there's some overhang. So wanted to understand what is still bothering us. Will it be landed cost, which because of tariff might impact our competitiveness? Because you highlighted that the business in US is pretty strong, data centers plus the macro demand there. And you highlighted that the massive imports are still happening in US for cables and conductors. So what is one thing?
So, I'm cutting it. You know, there are three data points that I mentioned, which is the best information that we have as of today. One is that there is an over $20 billion annual import that is taking place and is likely to continue. Second thing is that the key exporting countries into the U.S., India, even at the moment, is not at a disadvantage relative to Mexico, Vietnam, Cambodia, and Indonesia. So, in that sense also, we are... not so badly off. Hopefully the tariffs will be down lower than what they are. The third thing is that the US is importing aluminum, and that at the moment is under a special section 232 where the tariff is at 25%. And that section 232 is based on products which need to be manufactured in the US in the long run and is of strategic importance. So, if you look at these data points, it doesn't point towards, us having, meaning I'm sure that we are very optimistic that things should settle down. So, you may find a little disruption in the short term, but hopefully it'll iron itself out, over time.
Right. So finally, any guidance you would like to give for EBITDA per ton growth, or maybe also for the oil business, EBITDA per KL, any guidance you would like to give for FY26?
So in terms of oil division, the volume growth we are looking is about 6-8%, and EBITDA guidance is about 5,000-6,000 per KL. In the conductor division, we are looking at a volume growth about 10%. And EBITDA per metric ton of 30,000 plus tailwinds on a 12-month basis. In the case of cable business, it would be value growth of 25% and then EBITDA range of 10-12% on a 12-month basis.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much for taking my question.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jayesh Sundar from Axis Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hi sir, this is Nitin here from Axis Mutual Fund. So just one question on the non-US business. You articulated your context, I think, over the last 2-3 quarters that competition is really increasing from the Chinese players in the non-US market. But how are you thinking about it? Because it's also a very decent piece, which is, coming down quarter by quarter. So is there something backward integration or localization or putting a sub-assembly there helps you? And I just want to know how, as a promoter, you're thinking about it. Will it structurally keep perennial issue? It keeps coming down only now. There is no chance of recovering back. How one should think about this business, if you can throw some light on the non-US part?
So the thing is, with the Chinese government policies, we have seen in the past also, at times they have kind of subsidized the aluminium and steel in China. So that has given the advantage at that time. But these things go in cycles and cannot be predicted. So we don't want to kind of, do any backward integration or any such thing in China. Because then again, we may not be able to, have that sustainable advantage. It's all dependent on how the Chinese government policy is from time to time.
On the contrary, we are looking at, and we had mentioned this in the previous earnings call as well, and we've gone ahead to appoint advisors, you know, to look at manufacturing in the United States. And so, you know, that exercise is actually going on. Because not only do you have, you know, a tariff and a potential tariff overhang, but there are certain projects which are being executed and there are certain public utilities in the U.S. Who want to buy only U.S. manufactured products because of the way in which they get compensated, etc., etc. It's a very complex, you know, sort of network in the U.S. But there is, and there are, you know, customers who pay a premium for immediate deliveries, you know, very short notice delivery. So that exercise is going on. So rather than looking at backward integrating and doing anything in China, we are looking more in terms of wanting to produce examine production, say, in the United States, given that, you know, that market is such a large market and will continue to be a large market over the next decade or so.
So the CapEx which you have announced, does that entail a picture of putting something in US as well, or that'll be a fresh investment that should we should look this year announcement should come, or how are you thinking about that?
So this current investment is all the investment that's going into our existing manufacturing plants in India, as well as there's a piece of in the UAE for our oil business, where we are putting in some new tankage and stuff over there. So it's all in our existing manufacturing facility plus this greenfield facility coming up in the cable side. So the US will be something that will be over and above this. Okay. And then the growth numbers would be also different. There would be additional growth to support, you know, that investment.
Okay. Now, why I'm asking this, sir, because sorry for again, pressing on this dwell, because there's a recent agreement that happened with China as well, the FTA between the US and the China. Can you throw some light, because those now the articles are not out yet, which product gets about 25% or a 30% duty versus us. Can you throw some light if when we send a conductor from here to US versus what China now will send to US, is the duty arbitrage has become very narrowed down, or still the arbitrage is still
so if about 20-30%? What has happened is that everything has reverted back with a 10% delta to what was existing. So there's an additional duty of 10% which is put on every single country, correct?
Right.
And in the case of China, that additional is 30%, because previously the delta between others and China was 20%. So what the Trump administration has done is they've recalibrated back to whatever deltas were there with a 10% increase. So that is what is happening in this 90-day period. I guess the Chinese 90-day period is a little bit different than the rest of the world, because we were from, you know, maybe 9th of April onwards to put this in place. But otherwise, the economics, I don't think that there's anything more favorable going to come into China relative to India. That delta will probably remain, you know, then the signaling is that it's going to remain at 20%.
So basically, I was asking this only that going forward, the US itself will become very important for us, and non-US will now face a perennial issue until unless you feel that you set up a plant in US which can cater to the other parts of the world at a less...
No. So the plant in the US will look at catering to the US, and especially those utilities which buy US product and which work on short deliveries. What Chaitanya has mentioned is that even in the past, the Chinese have done this. You know, in the last 15 years, this is the third time that they are subsidizing by, this time a lot more, by 8 to 12%. But, you know, that adds up in multiple billions of dollars. The way they do that is they subsidize the price of the metal for our industry. There are other ways of subsidizing for other industries. So that bill becomes a massive bill over a period of time. So they have, after doing it for X number of months or up to a year or year and a half, then they pull that off. And then again, you have a period where the Chinese people then, you know, are not in a position to, compete as much. So we believe that these sort of cycles of subsidy are there to meet a certain objective. And When the bill becomes too hefty, then it gets reduced. And we've seen that happen twice before in the last 15 years at least.
I'll also add there that a lot of this is because the Chinese government has tried to help their manufacturers who earlier had a decent market in the US. And then suddenly they were out of the US market. So then to help them to penetrate the rest of the markets, this kind of subsidy is being given. So if suppose things may at some point not be, you know, so difficult for the Chinese manufacturers in the US market, then it is possible that subsidy may also get reduced out. But we can't say for sure what will happen exactly as of today. But this is one of the reasons we were given to understand from people that we have been talking to in China.
Got it. And so this last question on the guidance of EBITDA per ton, I mean, this has become the very difficult number for us to predict. Given the 30,000 per ton kind of a guidance next year plus the tailwind, Ramesh said, generally, you know your order book of conductors from the very first day. It's just when what gets executed becomes difficult, right, to assess in which quarter. And in the current order backlog, is it safe to assume that 40 to 45% is still premium? And that's where, at that premium level, this guidance of 30,000 is given on an annualized basis.
Yeah, so the way we guidance has been given is based on an estimated number for 12 months, and a lot of it we don't have an order book as of now, but it's more of a medium term guidance that we have given because the pending order book that we have also have some deliveries that may fall beyond FY27. About 20% of the pending order books are those deliveries that can happen 26.
Got it.
Yeah, after FY26. So, and we, at the same time, we also get a lot of orders during the quarter, and that has to be executed in the quarter. So, typically, it's very difficult to estimate an EBITDA for our line of business, and we have always been saying that we need to look at this EBITDA on a 12-monthly basis rather than on a quarterly basis. But based on the premiumization and the mix changes that we have worked out, we feel that anytime it could be anywhere about 30,000 plus tailwinds. That depends on the kind of product mix and the geography mix that we do.
So you see, last year also there has been, because of the election year and things, a lot of HTLS and upgrade projects, you know, didn't happen. We are also in the process of, you know, various tenders have come up, etc., etc. So, you know, if these premium things keep on happening, then, you know, if you saw, we had said that, you know, if you take a 5-year period or an average, we were talking about 25 to 26,000, then we upgraded it to 27 to 28. Now with the mix of product and what we see, we can further upgrade it to 30,000. So as more and more time passes by on, you know, the execution of these things and the visibility on these things, then I guess we would be in a position to then keep revising the guidance. But a 30,000 is a guidance which, as Ramesh says, you know, it's a medium-term guidance that you can work on.
Got it. That's very helpful, team, and all the very best.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sagar Dhawan from ValueQuest. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Question on the domestic conductors business. So we've seen a strong growth in the domestic business, about 64% growth in FY25. Just wanted to understand, going into FY26, what is the outlook and what could be the drivers for growth to be able to grow from a very good growth we've seen in this year already in the domestic conductors business?
So we look at the growth thing more from a blended totality point of view. Though the domestic business has grown 64%, what we look at, what gives a higher EBITDA per metric ton, whether it be domestic or exports, and based on this thing and also based on our factory utilization, we end up executing the orders. So I would say that we'll more be guided with a blended growth rather than looking at domestic and exports for the division.
Understood. Just a follow-up, just based on the demand environment that you see in the domestic market today, would it be fair to assume that next year as well there could be a double-digit sort of a growth, or, you know, any number on the purely on the domestic growth outlook?
Yeah, so the market outlook looks positive with the kind of transformation capacity and transmission line that is needed, and based on various you know, documents that is there for 2030 till 2030 onwards, the market outlook is positive. Our growth will largely will depend on where the higher margin per metric ton is there, and accordingly we'll allocate capacity either to domestic or export business based on the profitability that we get out of the orders.
So, you know, if I may just add to Ramesh's, like, you know, we've grown by this percentage when you can, you know, as you saw in the opening remarks, that the transmission network has grown only by 2%, you know, the transmission line network, because of various right-of-way issues, this election period, there's been a lot of manpower shortage also. You know, during that whole election period, you know, there's big manpower shortage, etc. So, if these plans are executed, and we can see that, you know, several very, very mega solar projects are coming up, you know, solar wind hybrids are coming up. If the pace of the transmission line addition start increasing, then you will see even further levels of growth. That's one of the reasons why we've been quite aggressive in terms of wanting to add the capex in place so that we can proactively get after the demand rather than react to the demand.
Understood. Sir, just in terms of the capex that you are adding on the conductor side, you said 300 crores. How much of capacity are we adding in terms of metric tons earlier by this capex?
It would be about 10% will get added.
So about 25,000 tons, but this 25,000 tons is capable of being made, you know, for all the premium type products as well. So you have HTLS, you have CTC. All of those high-end products can be made with this 25,000-ton expansion.
Got it. And one last question from my side. What would be our market share in the domestic conventional conductors market and in the AL-59, if you have the numbers offhand?
It's about 25% or so.
Understood. Thanks. Thanks for taking my question.
It would be much higher than the HTLS and, you know, those premium side. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Maulik Patel from Equirus. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Kushal bhai, I've never seen you so much bullish in last 15 years of tracking you. Given that you're spending close to 1,300 crore rupees over the next 18 months, almost 50% higher than what your current cross block is that. And you have summarized your optimism that various government schemes and the capex which is driving that. I just one question on that. How are you going to fund this capex of 1,300 rupees? Because we are not, I mean, we have never done this kind of on a capex in such a short period of time over the last, in our history.
So, you know, we've just had discussions at the board level itself on that, and the plan is to do, 650 crores coming from our equity and 650 crores coming from a long-term debt. So we'll use a one-to-one equity debt, you know, combination to fund this.
Got it. And the second question is that, in terms of, look at that when you had hardly any margin in cable 10, 12 years back, now you are almost 5,000 crore rupees of top line and 10, 11% margin. Cable was hardly contributing anything to the operating profit at that point of time, and now almost 30% plus. In a way that, and the way your capex plan is that, you want to bring cable to from 5 to 10,000 crore rupees. Are we going to see a more and more of a cable company in the future than the other two? Obviously, today, the conductor EBITDA is a relatively on the higher side and probably sustained for next 1 or 2 years. But eventually, in the next 3 to 4 years, the mix will be much more towards cable and less towards other two businesses. Is that what the way you think about the business?
So I think, Maulik, our position is that, you know, we want to support all the three businesses, you know, be agnostic to supporting one business more versus the other. I think we did that the equity raise, you know, in November of 2023, simply because we wanted a stronger balance sheet in place to allow all the businesses to grow on their own merit. So whereas we see that the cable business has the largest addressable market, and as a consequence, you know, as we are also growing from strength to strength in terms of all the specialty products, specialty applications, the conductor business itself, you know, being 50% of our revenue, is also growing at a fairly rapid pace. All over the world, transmission lines have to be added. So we are equally bullish on both of those businesses. Within the oil business, the transformer oil business is also growing at double digit. It's the other lubricant pieces which are growing relatively slower. And we are quite happy with that. You know, let it be at whatever. We're still growing more than the market is growing. So I don't think as a management, I don't think we are looking at supporting one business more than the other. We would like to support each of the businesses on its own merit, and as long as it makes economic sense to invest in that and grow it, we are going ahead and doing it. So you will see the cable forming a larger percentage of the total revenue because it is going to grow at a faster pace than conductors, and the oil business will probably be at the slowest pace of the three. Already in FY26, you will find the cable business being larger than the specialty oil business in terms of revenue.
In operating profit, it is already much larger than the TSO segment. Just one question on the net and the balance sheet. What is the acceptance on the books at the end of FY25?
It's about 3,500 crores, Molly.
We remain same, right? I think compared to the last year, the number has been pretty much stagnant.
Yes, because we have deployed a lot of cash into cash purchases. The available profit we have been deploying into cash purchases. And that's where it has been low. And also, the earlier statement that when we talked about the funding of that, half of it will be debt and half of it will actually be internal accruals, which is instead of equity. Equity actually meant already the internal accruals or internal cash that we have on our books. So currently, all this cash has been used to, pay more, get purchases on cash basis. And therefore, as you rightly said, that acceptance level has been same. Once we deploy money of this cash into the capex, we will see a large, higher acceptances going forward.
We will see the higher number on the acceptance side next financial year.
Yeah, like as the money will get deployed into capex, that is where it will get funded from.
But you will also see in the actual working capital management that we have grown the business and reduced the number of days that we use the cash. It's almost down by a week, 7 to 8 days. Overall, so net working capital is also down 7 to 8 days.
Got it. And last question, if you allow me to. How is this, we heard earlier that some of this EPC player like KEC and even the, which has gone into and set up the conductor plant, right, own captive consumption, and I think Adani was looking to, and they acquired the Diamond Power and they are also adding it. Where do you see this new conductor capacities coming up in the domestic market, and do you think that will have any kind of bearing on a longer term conductor margin? Because you have, I've seen that you keep adding your value-added products. You keep investing in R&D and keep coming out with a new product, which has been your age over the last 7-8 years. And that has reduced the volatility in the conductor margin at a large extent. But this upcoming capacities, are there more for the traditional conductor or anywhere in for the specialist, any premium conductor?
So the thing is, Maulik, that, the kind of investment which is being made, for example, KEC in conductors, they will produce the conventional type of conductors, ACSR AL59. I think we not only produce that, and I've produced it quite efficiently, because, we are fully integrated, including doing our own alloying, etc. So they have to now develop their alloying technology for AL59. But we have developed the alloying technology not only for AL59, but we do gap conductors, ACSS, ACCC, we do a whole range of copper products. Next year our copper business will be over 3,000 crores, which will be, if you just look at the cable companies, it will be in the top tier, 10 cable companies on copper, Not even 10, maybe the 5th or 6th largest. If you just look at the copper that's being produced on the conductor side. So, the business has evolved quite a lot, We do a lot of specialized EPC as well, which supports these premium products. So I think for us, we are playing an infinite game. We are interested in increasing our own product mix, figuring out what are the products which, so you know, you've got people like you know, the large developers who are also bidding on TBCB lines to evacuate power from some of the generation sources that they have. We are in dialogue with them, saying that why are you looking at only you know, conventional conductors? We can offer you a full range of other products which can reduce your losses, your cost of ownership, etc. So the game that we are playing is now completely moved you know, away from just producing a conventional conductor. The same thing is there on the cable side. On the cable side, you know, if you want to get into renewable energy, so on the renewable energy, there is a certain Indian standard, but there is a much higher standard that exists in Australia and in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
There is also a higher UL standard that exists in the United States. So we are making products of all those standards. We are now pitching those products, saying we supplied thousands of kilometers to these countries. Why don't you look at upgrading in India to those standards? Because they're all meant for being able to weather the weather, temperature fluctuations, you know, the hostility in terms of wind, sunshine, you know, all those things. Water. You see, there's a lot of stuff going into deserts and into, you know, the probably into the runoff Kutch and, you know, those areas. So that's all salty terrain, or it's, you know, desert terrain. So there are different types of products which can come up, you know, to better manage the application. Because these panels are supposed to last for 35, 40 years. We've just launched a new, we were the first to do Apar Anushakti in the country, the E-beam house wire. Now today you have RR cable has come in, Phenolex has come in, Polycab has come in, V-Guard has come in, everybody is trying to follow. We've come up with an upgraded product that instead of carrying 50% more current, carries 100% more current. Instead of having 50-year life, has a 70-year life. And it's a zero halogen product, so it's less toxic in case, you know, an accident does take place. So I think we are constantly in a position to keep upgrading, and that's the game that we want to play. So whether Birla enters this or whether you have Adani entering the wires business, I think there's enough and more business available for players like us to continue to innovate and sell, you know, in different segments and different geographies.
What kind of a growth you delivered in FY25 in the Anushakti side?
About 37% was the growth.
This makes close to around 350 crore kind of a top line on that?
Yeah, about 375 crores.
Yeah.
Got it. Thanks. Thanks, Kushal Bhai. Thanks, Ramesh. Thanks for taking my questions. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nikhil from Kizuna Wealth. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir. Congratulations on a great set of numbers, and thank you for giving me the opportunity. So my first question is, like, in our quarter four, like there were a lot of companies that were front running due to the US tariffs. So have we seen such a scenario in our clients? And second, sir, now with this so much tariff pause in the Q1-2, so are we expecting that company will pile up the inventory and then we will see a phase of inventory de-inventarization phase again?
Sorry, your first question we didn't understand. Can you repeat?
So like in the Q4, we have seen a lot of companies front running the tariffs. Like a lot of companies started building up their inventory. So have you seen the same phenomenon? And the secondary, now with the tariff pause, so are companies still building the inventory, and now are we seeing inventories being built up and then we will see a phase of de-inventarization in Q2 or Q3?
So it's a good question. I don't think, Nikhil, that's not what we are seeing at our end. We have a significant amount of our shipments which are going in directly to EPC players and project sites. So, you know, those are against the specific requirements which are there. We are not really seeing a big inventory build up. Also, you know, the many import distributors wanted to place much larger orders on us, but we had already booked out our capacity. So, we were not in a position to take on, you know, we didn't have any spare capacity. Everything was already allocated and orders were booked. So those are getting executed, and the kind of client mix which we are looking at, because now we've got a bunch of we've got a sales team on the ground and working with manufacturing reps, we are no longer looking at being overly dependent on an import distributor. They are the ones who, you know, actually stock up. They also sell a lot of cables in their own brand name through multi-listing on the UL. Whereas the APAR focus is to sell also a lot of APAR branded product with approval from end customers. So I think for us, the overhang is just basically in terms of the tariff and clarity on that, so that people can price their product, correctly. And our sense is that hopefully it will get resolved within the period of these 90 days. And then as the business, the new orders start coming in, they will come in from a much larger set of customers. So we are not worried about any front loading or, you know, front running, etc., or an inventory overhang in that sense. At least as of now, that doesn't seem to be the case.
So that's great to hear. That's absolutely great to hear. So my second question is like, how were the inquiries in the month of April and May? And now, as you said that China is providing 8 to 12% subsidiary. So are we expecting a price wars in the US market too?
So, you know, the serious buyers are actually been quite wary of wanting to, sign things up. The US-China relationship, as you can see, has been extremely volatile. And, the 90-day truce, as I mentioned just a few minutes earlier, which is there, is keeping the same delta as was existing before. So we don't see, anything like substantially, changing as such. In fact, the Chinese competition is hurting us in non-US markets. They're not so worried about China in the US market. We have to compete with them in other non-US markets.
Okay, that's great to hear, sir. And so now, as we have upgraded our guidance from 20,500 EBITDA per ton to 30,000 EBITDA per ton, so are we assuming that EBITDA per ton has bottomed out? Now there's only upward trajectory going forward.
So we have been saying this earlier also. We need to look at it on a 12-month basis. And that's how we have given this guidance. So there would be some quarters where EBITDA is low, some quarters EBITDA is high, because of the nature of the business is such that it's all made to order business. And therefore we need to look at a long-term 12-month or even beyond that to get a good feel of the numbers.
But as things are, as you have premiumization taking place, as you move from conventional ACSR to AL59, all that. So fundamentally the product mix should, drive it upward.
Okay, that's great to hear, sir. And so my last question is on the new Trump administration is not the fan of renewable energy. They are more into coal thing. So have we seen any kind of clients having lower confidence in the renewable energy capex or something like that?
So, the point of view that, we have been able to gather through various customers and whoever we are in touch with, including developers in the United States, is that solar, including the energy storage, the ESS system, is the cheapest form of energy available to add in the shortest period of time. So the solar side of the business is going to continue. You have more and more US manufacturing also being set up. Waaree, for example, has set up US manufacturing. I think other manufacturers from India are also exporting panels to the US. So the solar side looks very much intact. The wind is a mixed bag. There are certain corridors in the US which are extremely windy and can carry a high plant load factor. So those corridors, you can continue to develop. What is likely to stop is the subsidy that is going on the wind side. And the offshore wind, which was being built only with subsidies, pretty much, for making it viable, that is to be forgotten as far as the US is concerned. So we don't see the renewable story completely ending. We see the subsidy story ending. So the renewable that's actually able to stand and expand based on its own economics will continue to expand. And see, today the permitting in the US is very, very tedious. So in whatever direct information we have, it takes 10 to 12 years to get permitting to build a transmission line in the US versus 3 years in India. So the similar issues are there for building power plants and, you know, power sources as well. So you will see solar addition happening because that is the fastest way of being able to actually get power. If you add it along with battery storage capacity, then you are able to deliver power 24/7.
Okay, sir. That's great to hear, sir. That's it for my part. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mimok Shah from Goyam Lakhvi FinTech Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity and congrats for the good set of numbers. So most of the questions you are answered. So I have just one follow-up question. Sir, in the last phone call you were mentioning that company is supplying the cables to the major data centers, like you were mentioning today as well, like Microsoft, right? So so you were exploring the liquid cooling solution, right? And but making a test site. So has there been any progress on this development?
So we at the moment have not, meaning we've developed a product here. We are still looking at how to test market it, etc. Because, you know, the liquid dielectric, first of all, most of the data centers today do not use liquid. There are a few companies overseas that have been, you know, so they supplied as a system. So we've not really made any progress on that front. We are still working, knocking on doors and trying to figure out how we can get a trial for that to happen. In the meantime, the cables which are being supplied on, you know, from the, basically in the substation and substation to connecting to the data center equipment, you know. That side of the business is what we are covering today.
Got it. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Avnish Tiwari from Vaikarya. Please go ahead.
Hi. Am I audible?
Yes, yes.
My first question is, what is the tariff on your US exports you are doing for the cables? Say in May, you are paying compared to what were you paying in February or March? And the delta which you are experiencing now, how is it being shared between you and your end customers, whether it is importer or whether it's actual customer in US?
So the basic duty remains intact. So the basic duty that we were paying on cables is 4.9%. So for argument's sake, you can take it as 5%. Now, right, whatever has been put here is a reciprocal tariff. So that applies, right, over and above. So the 10% or 26% or 46% or whatever it is over and above the basic tariff which is in place. So currently it is at 5% plus 10%.
And the additional 10%, how are you sharing it between importer and yourself?
So there are different contracts with the customers. Some contracts are on FOB, some contracts are on DDP. Some are deliveries before July 9th, some are deliveries after July 9th. In some cases, we are talking to some of the customers who are agreeing to share a part of the duty. So those all mix and combinations are actually happening at the moment.
So all the FOBs is absolutely no problem. The DDPs, you know, we've had to sit and negotiate with customers. So there's been, you know, some portions where there's been a combination, you know, we picked up part of it, customers have picked up part of it. Some of the contracts have allowed us to pass the whole thing on. So overall, you won't see some major impact, at least for this 10% tariff, you know, fail.
Oh, that's good to hear. So basically, dominating part is FOB, or where most of the pain is shared by the importer, you only take part of it, a small part of it.
Yeah. So it, bulk of the business which you're executing right now is in that, you know, is in that bracket.
Right. The second question is that what is the dominating types of cables you export to US? Are these less than 1,000 volts or higher, more than 1,000 volts? And what is the key raw material in these cables, aluminum or copper?
So the bulk of what we export is all aluminum alloy. So there is a special alloy which is used in the United States, which is an 8,000 series aluminum alloy. So we produce that alloy ourselves, the rods, that is, from our rolling mills in the conductor division. then we are aged and then made into conductors and then finally insulated to make the cables. So, you know, there's a whole set on our website. If you go and see, you'll see a set of UL approved products. So those are the products which are being manufactured and shipped to the US. There are a few copper products as well, which is a relatively very small volume. The bulk of the volume is aluminum alloy based.
And these copper products would be cables of like less than 1000 or more than 1000 volts?
So the copper products which are being exported right now are basically medium voltage cables which are with copper in. So we are not really
not
lower end copper because there is a US has zero duty on import of copper even today.
Right.
There is a 25% duty on import of aluminum. So aluminum has been in a strategic manufacture in the US, whereas copper is something that even today the government believes that it should be imported in the US without tariffs. So our whole strategy has been focused more around products that are aluminum based, where APAR has always had a strength.
So the less than 1000 volt, are they typically using copper or aluminum if you want to do in future?
So the US is largely an aluminum market. Aluminum alloy market.
So less than 1000, no, I'm talking about a normal cable.
Oh, less than 1000, above 1000, only special applications you use copper over there. Otherwise, predominantly it's aluminum.
Got it. Mostly it's aluminum market. Then. Okay.
Yeah.
The last question I have is that you talked about Mexico also having the duty. But my understanding was most of these cables are under USMCA in Mexico. Is that like you were talking about mostly alloy, which is not part of that USMCA, or you think cables are also not part of USMCA and they are attracting duties if exported
right
from
now,
Mexico?
Right now, from our understanding is that unless and until Mexico comes up with anything different, they are also facing the same tariff situation as India is. The minimum tariff is 10%, whatever you want to bring into the US. Unless there is a very specific FTA in place, which is like the first one that they signed is with the UK. There's nobody else that they signed anything specifically with as of now. So we are in the same boat as Mexico as of today.
Okay, so you're understanding that these cables or alloy you are exporting are not part of USMCA in Mexico.
Yeah. I mean, from whatever we hear from our customers, they're saying that there's nothing advantageous currently in Mexico other than the short delivery cycle that's there.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. And just last question I can pitch in. How much extra either margins at the contribution level or EBITDA level you make or better working capital terms you get the same cable or you are selling to US export versus in India?
So the US is better for you? The US is very tricky to just put a number because it's combination of FOB and DDP. So,
okay.
So it's not a number that I would like to hazard any guess. It keeps changing depending on who wants to buy FOB versus on a DDP basis. So EPC players normally want it on a DDP basis, but actual users are very happy to buy it on an FOB basis. So they have the full transparency of freight.
Right. But you make higher margin in US exports versus India sales. Is that fair to understand?
So it depends on different product and mixes. So on an apple to apple basis, we cannot actually compare this because different products goes for the US market and different products are there for Indian market. And we don't actually give out geography wise margins for the division.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amit Anwani from PL Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Just a follow-up. Is it possible to share the annual US contribution overall and as well as within conductors and cables this year, FY25?
So the margins we don't share.
Are you talking about the revenue that we've done?
Yes, revenue contribution.
Overall, US would be slightly on a higher single digit as compared to the total consolidated turnover.
And
so
we've done a little over 1,000 crores in cables, about 1,000 crores in cables and
600
on conductors, about 1,600 odd crores approximately overall. So that's why Amish is
saying how, this grown versus last year, 1600 on what this? FY24?
We have given that in our corporate presentation. It was slightly degrown still as compared to last year on an annual basis. But sequentially, things have improved. Every quarter has been better than the earlier quarter when it comes to the US sales.
Sure, sure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Raj from Archav Partners. Please go ahead.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes, yes. Please go ahead.
That is part on the outlook part. For FY26, you are intending to grow. And I couldn't hear that. So can you please repeat it?
Sorry, your line is breaking up. We're not able to hear you clearly.
Am I audible now?
Yes.
Am I audible now?
Yes, yes.
Sir, for FY26 outlook, I just skipped your comment. So can you repeat it again?
Yes. So on the oil division, we are giving a top line volume growth of 6 to 8%, EBITDA level margins 5,000 to 6,000 per KL. Cable division top line value growth 25%, EBITDA percentage 10 to 12%, and conductor division volume growth 10%, and EBITDA per metric ton 30,000 plus tail lengths.
30,000 plus
tail lengths.
All right, all right. And also, can you repeat on the capex part? How much? In what division?
About 1,300 crores of capex. About 200 coming from oil division, 300 in the conductor division, and 800 in cable division.
Okay. And how much time will it take for all these three to come on stream?
15 to 18 months.
Sorry, 15 to?
18 months.
15 to 18 months, all right. And how much will be your expanded capacity per ton?
So it will grow as, for the conductor division, it may grow by about 10% in terms of capacity. For the cable, as you already mentioned, once the entire plant is commissioned, then it will have capacity to generate revenue of about 10,000 crores once it is fully commissioned.
All right. And for the oil part?
So the oil, you know, we don't really, meaning there's no real capacity constraint other than on the auto industrial side, where today we run two shifts and we can just add a third shift in place. So this investment is going in largely in terms of building a storage facility in the port, in JNPT, and expanding our storage capability in Hamriya as well, in the UAE plant. So right now, almost 24 million liters of storage space we have on a rental basis from third party in Mumbai. So that is going to get collapsed into about 30-35 million liter storage, which we are building out in JNPA. And that also has a big productivity boost on the supply chain side, because the ship will be, will directly be able to unload from a ship into those tanks.
All right. Understood, sir. Okay, sir. Thanks. All the best.
Okay.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mayank Bhandari from ACM Market Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, just wanted few data points if you could provide. In the cables revenue, how much would be the B2C revenue? How much would be the defense telecom cable revenue, EHV revenue, and of course, railways revenue?
We don't give out so detailed revenue breakup for the division, but I can tell you about this. B2C is about 375 crore that I have mentioned earlier. But apart from that, the nitty-gritties of revenue coming from each sales, that's something we don't give out.
So have we started supplying to defense telecom?
No, you mean defense telecom or for us there are two separate verticals. One is defense and the other one is telecom. So,
yeah, the cable that we are supplying to the defense.
Yeah, so that's something that's ongoing. We would see that in the future as more and more localization is taking place, the volume should start increasing. As I mentioned in my earlier comments, that we are bringing in additional equipment as well, which can help produce larger quantities of some of the sophisticated cables and line for the Indian Navy particularly.
What about EHV, sir? Are we doing any business in EHV?
So, as we complete our expansion in the cable side, currently we are able to produce up to 66 kV. So, this will go up to 220 kV that we will be able to produce.
Now, are we, does this contribute any revenue in FY25, EHV?
No. Because by the time the capacity goes in place and gets implemented, then post that we will start hunting, we will start working on getting approvals. So you will see that revenue not coming in FY26 at all. You may start seeing small portion coming in FY27, but a larger portion then coming in FY28. In the meantime, that same equipment is capable of producing up to 220. So you will produce the other voltage levels until, you know, those approvals come in.
What about the wind, sir? Wind cables?
So wind is produced on totally different equipment where we are also looking at doubling our capacity. Those are elastomeric cables or rubber cables. So that production is also going to be doubled in the same time frame.
Any
that's part of the 800 crore capex.
No, I'm just checking if we would give the contribution of the renewables cable revenue in the total cable revenue right now.
So we are not giving these, detailed breakups as such. But I mean, you know, both. Go ahead.
Yeah, last, what is the interest on the interest-bearing acceptances in FY25? Interest number.
It's about 6.5 to range from 6.5 to 7.5% over a period of time.
6.5 to 7.5%. No, I'm asking the absolute number of the out of the total interest expense.
Out of the total interest, if you see, about 90% would be on the acceptances only, because we have very less debt on the balance sheet. Most of it would be out of the acceptance only.
Well, last year, FY24, this number was around 240 crore.
Yeah, large part, almost everything would be out of, we have just one ECB loan on the balance sheet. Apart from that, everything else is actually the interest on the acceptances only. And that disclosure is there in the balance sheet, the interest part of on the ECB loan.
Okay, any guidance on FY26 for the interest expense?
So it will go in line with the volume of the business, as all of this is relating to acceptances. As the volume of the business grows, the interest cost will go up. Also, the interest cost depends on the price of aluminum and copper, because it's on the value of that purchases. So depending on the price of the metal, this fluctuates.
Okay, so thank you. That's it.
Thank you. As there are no further questions from the participants, I now hand the conference over to Mr. Kushal Desai for closing comments.
Yeah. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank everyone for participating in our Q4 and financial year FY25 earnings call. Just to summarize, we do have a few overhangs, like, you know, the U.S. Tariff situation, which should hopefully get clarity and sorted out in the next few weeks. But overall, as a management, we continue to remain very bullish on our business. We are putting in 1,300 crores of capex, which will go in over the next 12 to 15 months and then get commissioned thereafter. This is in addition to 500 crores, which we put in FY25. All the three businesses are poised to be able to grow. The product ranges also, as well as the premiumization of product and customers, is something that we are working on. And whereas, you know, it's always difficult in our business to predict quarter by quarter, but if you take a medium-term view, we continue to remain very bullish on the growth of the business. So once again, thank you so much for attending our call, and goodbye.
Thank you. On behalf of APAR Industries Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.